Hello, and welcome to the Preview Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting items from the current month's previews catalog. I am joined in this episode by my sister Kay, and we are sitting in a hotel up in Dallas right now, having just done our first day at Fan Expo Dallas, but technically it's the second day because it's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday convention. And Friday after I got off work, we drove up the couple hours from Austin to Dallas, slept in a hotel, and then bright and early this morning did the, 7-8 block walk or whatever.
In the freezing cold.
Yeah, I was expecting temperatures more in the 50s. It was 35, I think.
Yes, and just for context, when we drove up yesterday, it was 80.
Yes.
So that makes the temperature more noticeable than it otherwise might have been.
And again, a couple of block, 7-8 block walk. So definitely ready to...
Half mile.
Get into the heated building when we got there.
Yes.
Fan Expo, we went to this 2 years ago here in Dallas,
mm-hmm.
And good-sized convention.
Yeah.
When we checked in at press registration, they were saying they were expecting about 60,000 people,
mm-hmm.
And it certainly felt like a crowd of about that size.
They're using the same convention center that they were using 2 years ago when we attended, but different portions.
I think the portion we're at now was the far end, further down than we had gone before, whereas 2 years ago it was the extreme other end.
Because
there's like an arena thing at one mm-hmm. side, and we were on the far side from it this time.
Yeah. The exhibit hall is, as we entered the building, a little further to the right.
We entered around wherever hall C is, and we were in D or E or something.
Yeah. And last time the exhibit hall was more of an ABC thing. But I think registration was D last time, just like it was this time.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Well, the registration was, I think, almost where they put the kids thing this time. No?
No. All right. That might be. It was near that Omni Bridge. But I was trying to remember if it was before or just past.
Just past. The Omni is a hotel. There's a bridge to it. That's where we had some lunch 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
One time, and that was about the furthest extent in that direction we went this time, and that was almost the beginning of where things were this time.
Right, and that's where we registered last time, is that D220
yeah.
that we poked our heads in this time, which is how I'm orienting myself.
That makes sense. The point to be had here is, even if you've been to a convention before and it's at the same location,
mm-hmm.
that's the building. It could be in a very different part of the building. We've noticed that at the Austin Wizard World a couple of times mm-hmm. and a few other conventions.
Well, and one of the things that excited me about this convention, well, two things. Okay, the guest list.
Yes.
Every time they announced a guest, it was, wow, they got them. Wow, they don't normally come to conventions. It just seemed to be getting better and better. But add to that, 2 years ago, I really enjoyed the venue. This time, the main theater venue that they used last time isn't in play.
Yeah, and the panels we went to this time were in what they were calling their main theater, but it was really just a curtained off part of the exhibit hall.
And for me, that is consistently a negative. Every convention I've gone to where they've curtained off the side of the exhibit hall, you've got bleed over sound between the two environments.
Well, and when we walked the hall in the morning, I noticed the bleed over sound, but I hadn't attributed it to, well, that's where they're doing the presentations.
I figured we were very near some presentations. I didn't realize we were just on the other side of the curtain from them.
One of the first years Wizard World Austin happened, they had essentially, it was almost like an L-shaped kind of a deal. There were two kind of squarish exhibit hall type spaces. One was the exhibit hall, and the other one, in the two corners of it,
mm-hmm.
diagonally across, were the two little quasi-panel rooms.
Yeah.
And they were, again, just curtained off, and both were bleeding into the other.
Yeah.
This, for as close as it was to, literally, it was in the exhibit hall, With the exception of the PA going off twice in one panel, I really didn't think it was that bad. Up until we left a panel and got funneled out and smack dab into part of the exhibit hall.
Yeah.
And it's a good exhibit hall. It's a good size exhibit hall.
Yes.
But it's got 10-foot aisles, maybe 8. I mean, they didn't feel wide.
It's not designed to have a sudden influx of 1,000 or 2,000 or how many thousand people into a one-aisle zone. And it's frustrating to come out of a panel, look to your left, and see a bank of doors that have people in front of them saying, not an exit. Okay, you turn to your right, you go 10 or 20 feet to where you have another person saying, this is an exit for premium badge holders only.
Yeah, it's interesting because if you're a premium badge holder, they clear the room between panels.
Yes.
Which, pros and cons, there's no good answer to this.
Yes.
There are just two choices, and each have, like I said, pros and cons. With this, again, clearing it each time, so we would get out of one panel, have to go through this maze, go through part of the exhibit hall, to go back out, back down a hallway, to go down another hallway, to go down another hallway, to get back in line, to get back into the room we were just in.
It made it very difficult to line up for the next panel.
But if you were a premium holder, you could cut some of that and not have to go through the exhibit hall. Giving in, get to a shorter line.
Yes, because they had their own separate line.
So, again, not a pro or a con, but something to be aware of.
Yeah.
And certainly if you're going to any convention for the celebrities, for the panels, which is a lot of fun to do, make sure you have an understanding of, do they clear the room between panels? Where are the various panels you want to get? Where are they physically located? Yeah. I've had 1 or 2 years at different conventions where I've missed a few panels because it's like I went the wrong direction by the time I hiked the other way. And I think it was here 2 years ago, I tried to go to one downstairs. And by the time I got there, the room was full.
Yeah. Well, and an added consequence of clearing the room between panels, the panel is shorter.
Yes. They had these things scheduled 1.5 hours apart and they were only 45-minute panels.
Yeah. I figured at 1.5 hour interval, that meant we were getting a nice full hour panel.
Yeah, the panels, while good,
yeah,
felt a little short, and that was a little frustrating. We had the same moderator throughout. I didn't even catch his name.
Aaron. We got first name at one point.
One or two of the guests seemed to know him, a few, no clue. Mm-hmm. And that comes down to how many conventions do I think some of these people go to as guests. He did a decent job. I've seen better moderators. I've seen a lot worse. But he also threw to questions of the crowd very early and he was getting better at it later in the day where, I mean, it's like, hey, don't ask questions for stuff that hasn't come out yet. Mm-hmm. We're not doing spoilers and things like that. He even precluded a few questions that the answers would have been misinterpreted as fact on the internet, whether they were stated that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, there are a lot of questions. And in fact, we had a great conversation with Richard Anderson. When you had asked him, you know, is there any movie you've seen recently where you said, you looked at it and you said, wow, I wish that script had been there when I was the right age for any character in that script, a specific character you liked, what would it have been? What character would you have wanted to play? And it prompted just this great conversation. I think he would have excluded that question.
Because I don't.
He was excluding anything that made it sound like this person just said they want to do this, they want to work with this person.
He was excluding questions that were spoilers for upcoming movies or for upcoming seasons.
Or made it sound like an actor wanted to do something.
The question in that was, who would you like to guest star in your show?
Any superhero you would like your superhero to be with.
I took it as fair for the moderator to disallow. But, I mean, there's some questions. It's like, come on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how does the season start? How does the season end? You got to disallow.
Yeah.
But some questions are going to be better than others. I noticed a number of people had their cell phone with them because they had written down the question.
Yeah.
I think that's a really smart move, and we got some really good questions as a result.
Yes.
There were also a couple of kids that asked questions, some of which were really cute, some of which were really good questions. One or two of which were just, you know, the microphones in front of them, all eyes, and they froze.
One little girl was baffled that Tom Cavanaugh wanted an answer back from her.
Yes. Well, she had a good question of, you know, what's your favorite book? And he turned the question on her, what's yours, after he had answered.
Yeah, and she did not expect it to become a conversation.
Let's go through the panels we went to real quick, and then we'll do what we did in the morning.
Okay.
Since we're talking about panels anyways. Yeah. The first panel we went to was Charlie Cox, who plays Daredevil, who does not natively speak in an American accent. So I thought he sounded nothing like his character to a degree. But he was a lot of fun.
I thought he did just really good eye contact with everyone.
For a blind guy, it's amazing. Clear he's not gone to a ton of conventions.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have quite the polish some people get on that.
It's funny, though. He made a comment that by the end of the day, I have much greater appreciation for. He said, I constantly smile. In fact, during filming, I had to remind myself, it's out of character to smile so much. Don't smile so much. And when you're taking a few photos during the panel and you want to catch a photo of the actor smiling, some people just sit and think as opposed to just relax into a smile.
It's interesting watching people in a panel, the guests, because you get a sense for kind of, at least their on stage personality, not to say their character, but not to say this is also the way they are just in a regular setting or whatever, a private setting. But there were certain things that clearly amused Charlie Cox, not all of which he said, but you know what I mean? The recollections and stuff. The other people we saw were Amy Jo Johnson, the original Pink Power Ranger. And there were a number of things where it's like, that was supposed to be a joke. She would say, it's like, she doesn't have the delivery. She had mentioned being very insecure as an actress, and I think also as a con guest, she's at that point. Which is a shame, because I think she was a good guest.
She was.
And I think one or two of the things she said was misinterpreted by the moderator.
Yes.
Because they had had a reel of her stuff, and almost all of it was Power Rangers. A surprising amount was from the two Power Ranger movies. So that's like 3 hours worth of content, because they were about an hour and a half movie each for Power Rangers and Power Rangers Turbo, out of the three seasons of 65 episodes each that she did, or thereabouts. So again, I thought that was a little out of thing, but she also commented how there was like nothing from Flashpoint or Felicity.
Yeah.
And that was almost taken as a, well, we're done talking about Power Rangers now, and that was the panel starting.
Yeah.
And she was very much not the case there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It was just she wanted to point out she had continued. She'd done other stuff. And she was commenting at one point kind of the things she learned in various jobs and the way she felt she grew in her other jobs.
That was one where I would have liked a little bit more of an interview to start the panel off in a longer panel.
Yes.
Because I think there were questions to be had about her time, both on Felicity, certainly on Flashpoint, that could have been very interesting. But because she made a couple of comments about how the two lead guys on Flashpoint would really kind of challenge a couple of the directors.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that'd be cool to kind of go into. Yeah. In what way? How so? What did you learn?
Well, and there was one question from an audience member that was a very good question that she didn't understand, and the moderator didn't help her understand, which was when Felicity, Carrie Russell, got the haircut, and it was such a big deal in the news and everything, how do you think all of that would have gone down in the age of social media?
Yeah. I think the question was poorly phrased.
It was.
And that was somebody who did not have notes in front of them when they went up.
Yes.
But I think they had a good question.
Exactly. Exactly.
But it didn't come out as well as it could have.
Yeah. Because I think if she had understood what the question was trying to ask, because where she went with the question was first of all, social media can be exhausting, both trying to participate in it, trying to contribute it, but trying to keep up with it. But also when she was pointing out, as someone who professionally is trying to use social media, she's second guessing, but who's reading this? Because she has gone into directing and writing.
Well, you're talking to somebody, but you're talking literally to nobody and everybody at the same time. And that's kind of a little mind-blowing.
Yes.
Not exactly the way she phrased it, but she was aware it was an all-ages thing. Yes. So
yeah.
She was self-censoring a little bit.
At that point.
At that point. Not always. One or two times she slipped.
And she apologized.
And she got it.
But I think it is an interesting question of had social media existed when Kerry Russell got that infamous haircut? Because how many people claimed the show got canceled because of the haircut?
I don't know how Amy Jo Johnson's career would have gone if social media as it is today existed back in 1992 when Power Rangers launched.
Well, that's an interesting point. I was thinking even back in the Felicity days, because really I didn't even really truly watch Felicity. I simply had passing acquaintance mm-hmm. with it. And yet Felicity is what I know her from initially.
You look at how the meteoric rise of Power Rangers, the phenomenon it became, mm-hmm. and how it went over time. She is admittedly a very self-conscious actor, insecure, she is, mm-hmm. as the way she put it. And for somebody, because she was, you know, late teens, early 20s or whatever when she did the show and the movies, mm-hmm. to go through that kind of a thing under today's microscope of social media.
Well, and she was saying that when she would read the scripts for Power Rangers, and they were saying, you know, how did you prepare for the scenes, this, that, and the other? She said, I had in my head that it should have been a blonde, and basically I thought they miscast my role.
Yeah, her envisioning of Kimberly is not her Kimberly.
Yeah.
And somebody basically pointed out, so it's essentially the Catherine character that replaced you. And she's like, yeah, I got it right the second time. She had a very self-deprecating sense of humor.
Yes.
But it was one of those where the delivery was almost deadpan enough
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
to not come across necessarily as a joke. It was...
Yeah. Yeah.
It's something that I think if she were to get a little more comfortable doing these panels,
yeah.
she'd make an awesome guest. Because yeah. she's very smart. She's incredibly nice. She doesn't take herself too seriously, but she does take her stuff seriously.
Yeah.
She respects the fandom. She was mentioning how over the last 5 years or so, she's noticed either a resurgence of Power Rangers or maybe she's just more tuned into it. For my money as a fan, I think it's had a major resurgence.
I think it's a combination. She probably has gotten more tuned into it.
Oh, absolutely.
As well as a genuine resurgence. But she made fascinating comments on the resurgence.
You know, for me as a fan, I mean, I've been aware of Power Rangers the entire time it's been on the air, and I've been going to Comic-Con, and I've been going to Comic-Con prior. But it's really only been in the last 5 years or so that we've really started to see people cosplay
yeah.
as the Rangers, and it's gotten a wider acceptance.
Well, she was saying that the core fan base, the ones who started with Power Rangers when they were in elementary school and grew up with it, really,
yeah.
are now, would she say, 28 to 36 years old, I think she said. And she said, now stop and think about that. You are our people. But 5 years ago, you all hit it in the workplace. You started getting the purchasing power.
Yeah.
And she had that understanding of the connection between. It's not a fluke. There's been a resurgence.
Well, and she's just directed a feature film.
Mm-hmm.
She's done a couple of shorts and stuff. And at one point she's asked, you know, have we all seen it? And like three hands raised. She knew one of the guys.
Yes.
Now, I'm assuming he's been to a number of conventions and that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a very loyal fan base any actor, I think, gets to if they've been on a show of note.
Yeah.
Even, I mean, there are a couple that we've followed from bit parts on the pilot of a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
The limo driver in Encore Encore.
That's what I was thinking.
So, you know, if you like somebody's work, you're going to follow them. And she's totally, because she was asked, you know, how has this impacted you being a Power Ranger and stuff? She's very cognizant of the fact that a lot of her fans have followed her since then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, through Felicity, Flashpoint, to her directing and such.
Well, and she was saying there again that there are kind of two categories. There are the ones who were in elementary school. They were deeply into Power Rangers, but they weren't quite old enough for Felicity. But then thanks to DVDs
yes.
and all the streaming and everything, they came back to her.
They didn't follow her career because of the age they were at versus mm-hmm. the target ages of the shows and stuff like that.
Yeah, but they never forgot her. They stayed loyal to her. And when they became the right age for what she had done, they sought it out.
Yeah.
And I thought that was an interesting appreciation for her fans.
It was a good panel. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't know how many of these she's done. There are some people that clearly have done this a number of times to have gotten comfortable with it, have some prepared answers to some common questions.
She had a lot of interesting stuff to say, both about directing and writing.
Oh, very much so.
And the fact that she's been continuing to go to school, take classes, to learn more about the craft.
It's just odd to start a panel with the current point that people are unfamiliar with, mm-hmm. for the most part, versus let's go through a quick rundown of your bio and stuff.
Yes.
Because if the host were to start the panel with a, she did Power Rangers, then she did Felicity, then she did this, then she did this, yes. then she did this, you're thinking, oh yeah,
mm-hmm.
good questions come out of that.
He seemed to come into each panel with the attitude of, this person needs no introduction at all, therefore I shall give them no introduction, please welcome to the stage, yeah. Amy Jo Johnson.
And it's funny because there was one or two questions for Charlie Cox, and I mean, I've watched Daredevil, we've watched Defenders, and they're like, so with this one, when you're doing this, the fight scenes with this actress, and I'm like, which actress was that again?
Yes.
You know, I think it was the Colleen Wing one, but I'm not certain. And it was, people assume you're just completely in the know. And again, I've watched all this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to say I've watched all of Power Rangers because I'm about a season behind. And there's even some early stuff because, I mean, 65 episodes for the first three seasons is a lot.
Now, I will say one guest out of the three we went to for panels today, very graciously, when they were asked, what's your favorite episode been out of your series so far, said, in the current season, there was an episode.
Here's the premise of an episode. Yes. I don't want to spoil it because you may not be current.
Yes, it has aired, but.
Tom Cavanaugh, and that was one from just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I was very impressed by that.
He, I think, is the most polished of the mm-hmm. guests they had in terms of convention appearances.
Yeah.
All of them, I think, are terrific actors.
Yes.
But his awareness that not everybody has necessarily seen all of it
mm-hmm.
or is necessarily current on everything.
Yes.
And to not just assume knowledge.
Yeah.
To an almost ridiculous point of, oh, I was with Grant Gustin. You know who Grant Gustin is, right?
He has an interesting sense of humor.
Yeah. He's definitely a bit of a jokester at heart, I think.
Yeah.
And he gave a really good panel. It was fun. It was entertaining. It was informative.
Mm-hmm.
He gave good answers while still sometimes poking a little fun at some of the questioners.
I think with Charlie Cox, the one time the type of sense of humor he has came through the clearest was when someone asked him if he thought he or Ben Affleck made the better Daredevil.
I think his first part of the response was, he's here, isn't he?
Yes. And that was, and he's a pretty big guy, yes. isn't he?
What I liked, though, is that after a little kidding around on that, he mentioned he'd seen the movie. He'd liked the movie. He mm-hmm. thought he was a good Matt Murdock. Didn't say he was a good Daredevil, which I found interesting.
Yes.
But he did say that there were aspects of his portrayal
mm-hmm.
that he liked, he thought worked, and has incorporated.
Yeah.
So, again, some really good answers and such.
Yeah.
On the Affleck front, that also reared its head a time or two in the Tom Cavanaugh one. Yes. When the PA system was announcing this is your last chance to get Ben Affleck autographs or whatever.
Yeah.
And the second time, at one point, he's halfway through an answer. He's tried to keep going, and Cavanaugh finally is like, Ben Affleck, and starts walking off to greet the autographs.
Well, it was photo ops at that point. Yeah. And he's like, sorry, guys, but a chance to get my photo with Ben Affleck.
Now, this is an okay answer, but.
Yeah. And he's like halfway off the stage. Then he comes back, he sits down, and he goes, sorry, guys, I couldn't afford the $4,000. You're stuck with
$5,700 or something. Yeah. He's definitely a bit of a jokester.
But I think that lends to why he's really enjoyed coming up with all these extreme, as you put it to me when we were walking to the convention center, caricatures.
Well, and he was very clear with the creation of some of the different versions of Wells. But he was going into it with, what did we not have that we kind of need or would make an interesting thing?
And that was interesting to me when he was saying, okay, we have kind of this palette of characters at Star Labs. What isn't on the palette at present?
And you've got the big bad of the season, but you don't have somebody who's kind of the thorn in the side every day.
Yes.
You know, or you got all these geniuses. You don't have somebody who's kind of just an idiot.
Yeah.
The annoying guy.
Well, and he was saying with HR, he knew from the beginning of the season that HR was going to make a great sacrifice. And that you weren't going to know initially that he was the one making the sacrifice.
He had an arc. And he knew what the arc was going to be, mm-hmm. and that gave him a little freedom to go do some stuff. Yeah.
And he said, you know, I had the drumsticks so that you could have a visual cue when I was on screen.
Well, and he had also talked at one point about how he would use action to kind of punctuate a scene.
Mm-hmm.
And the drumsticks were one of those things. The cocking of a gun at certain points, even though it was a gun that wouldn't do that kind of a thing, and they'd have to go add it in audio editing and such.
Yeah, he was saying trying to cock a gun with no moving parts is entertaining.
Yeah. So it's it was fun. He gave, like I said, a good panel and such. It was unfortunate because we were in the exhibit hall that the PA interrupted twice.
Yeah.
But it was a pretty big crowd for him.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty decent size for Charlie Cox. Kavanaugh pretty much filled the room.
Yeah.
Cox at least about halfway. Amy Jo Johnson, not so much.
Yeah. One of the things I typically notice with the various actors is most of them very good with kids, very nice with kids. With Tom Kavanaugh, when the little girl asked, what's your favorite book? Not only did he come up with some good answers, mm-hmm. and one that was kind of a I can encourage her type answer and asked her what hers was, he encouraged the entire crowd to give her a round of applause for giving an answer back to him and stuff.
Yeah.
And I really like when the actors do that kind of thing for the kids.
He was a surprising good judge of character.
Yeah.
Because there was also one question where somebody was asking about the popular Flash TV show. He's like, your words, not mine.
Yes.
And the guy's like, well, I'll take credit for that. Oh, you're taking credit for the popularity. No, no. It's yes. like, well, you walked into that one.
Yes.
And there are some where it's like, that would be a bad path to go down with certain questioners.
Yes.
Now, maybe he got lucky, but
yeah,
the lines were lengthy.
Yeah.
The only place I really saw chairs in the convention center were in that panel room.
Yeah.
There was press room, one or two other places.
Well, but there was one seating area by a little snack area on the exhibit hall.
Okay. All right. You're right. You're right. As with any convention, finding somewhere just to sit down is challenging. Yeah. That was most of our afternoon.
Yeah.
Our morning, once we got there, got our press badges and got into the exhibit hall, which was kind of weird because it was a go through the registration, get dumped to a hallway to go back into another room to...
Because bag check is at registration and reentry.
Yeah. And they did a decent job trying to secure the area.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say it's foolproof. I certainly don't think it was, but it was a solid attempt,
mm-hmm.
Which I appreciate. It's unfortunate that's needed these days, but... You know, we're in one of the next cities over, and we had a rash of bombings recently.
Yeah.
Even aside from that, you go to the Phoenix Convention, I guess, last year with the attempt on Jason David Frank and whatnot. So they've got to tighten up security at these places. So I thought they did a good job on that. But when we got into the exhibit hall and started going up and down that, it was a good mix of toy dealers, some comic dealers, a few of the smaller publishers, Zenoscope, Aspen. And a decent artist alley.
Calling it exhibitor hall is interesting. And I say that because when they give you the list of who's in there, they list maybe a little over a dozen in the way of exhibitors. And then they flat out say everything else is retailers.
I thought the majority of it was retailers, particularly as we went in and off on that right where we started. An amazing number of Funko Pops.
Yeah. But that's my point. It's in terms of exhibit hall like San Diego, where you go to DC, to Marvel, this is mostly regional stores.
Which is what I expected this because with the number of conventions going on, I mean, we're at this convention the same weekend that C2E2 is going on in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do booths at both if you're a publisher.
Agreed.
And even if you could, there's about 50 other shows of note. And really, San Diego, New York, that's where it makes sense for most of the publishers to kind of go.
Yeah.
It's a very crowded convention space in terms of the national convention scene.
Yeah.
This one, again, good number of dealers, a few that were just, well, that's odd for State Farm to be here, but hey. And the way that works, from what I've been told, and it may have been Sam who mentioned this, you know, if they've got some leftover spaces, they can't give it to other retailers that would have otherwise bought because it disincentivizes. There's another, you know, venue of the other, you know, the State Farm, the insurance companies, the, you know, we've got an empty booth, you want to take it kind of thing.
Well, I've overheard conversations from some of the surprising vendors where they've flat out said, yeah, I'm not going to make any money at this convention, but with an exhibitor badge, I get in early enough to go early for the autograph lines, this, that, and the other. And
there was a jewelry cleaning thing.
That one actually makes sense to me for the cosplayers.
For the cosplayers, and there's enough jewelry there. Okay, that struck me as odd. I saw it, and there's these bottles of orange stuff. I'm like, orange juice? No, was not. Don't drink it.
Yeah. In fact, I saw quite a bit of jewelry being sold.
Yeah, I saw quite a bit of that. I'm trying to think what else I saw. I was looking for a couple of Super Sentai sort of a things that I did not find.
Mm-hmm.
I did end up buying a Power Ranger of the Power Ranger Legacy line. It was Dino Thunder Blue. I'd just recently, in Wave 4, I think it's been out for a while, found Zeo Gold and Dino Thunder Red. And there was one other place that had the same Dino Thunder Blue, but that guy wanted to sell it for $35. This other guy wanted to sell it for $20, and I'm like, oh, I'll go for the $20.
I saw quite a few comic books.
There were a couple of booths that had a ton of them, so they were there to be had. I think in one of the lines we were in, it might have been for Tom Cavanaugh, somebody a couple behind us looked to be telling somebody else about some of the books they had bought, some Rebirth and some other stuff.
We saw somebody looking at some really nice blueprints for the DeLorean from Back to the Future, because there are cast members from that here.
When you're in line, it's always kind of fun to eye what other people have got with them, either as purchases or whatever.
Yeah.
The DeLorean blueprints, if we see, are tempting to get. Not that I need them.
Well, ThinkGeek is here, and they had the
pretty sizable booth for them too.
Yes, yeah.
They had the USB adapter, the Mr. Fusion thing.
Yeah.
So the ThinkGeek booth was interesting. What else? I'm trying to think if there was anything else that really caught my eye. There were a couple of things that were, you know, cool to look at, not something I would necessarily need to buy.
I was gonna say I always enjoy looking at the lightsabers. I heard one guy joking. Yeah, did you see the booth? They very proudly display at one end, we've got Rey's saber, and at the other end, we've got Luke Skywalker's lightsaber, and they're like, dude, they're the same one.
Well, that may not be true in the next movie. I'm kidding. One movie of the third trilogy, yeah.
Yeah.
One of the booths downstairs is showing something, and I'm like, that looks like a land speeder thing, and then when we're in the panel and they're showing all the trailers, oh, it's a trailer for Han Solo. Yeah, if you're not expecting to see trailers, you're going to see some of them at panels. Just they use that to keep the audience happy between panels. Good size artist alley, a couple of decent name people. Not going to go list them all off and stuff. It's one of the things that did draw us to this convention was the guest list. Pretty good one on the comics side, a terrific one on the media side.
Well, and for me, part of it was guests that, to my knowledge, don't frequently go to conventions. We've never seen Amy Jo Johnson.
No.
On the list at a convention we go to before. This is the first time we've seen Charlie Cox. Not to say he's not on the circuit. It's just a first for us. Tomorrow, Richard Dean Anderson.
Yeah, that was one of the ones that really caught my eye.
Mm-hmm.
There was also going to be Michael J. Fox, but he had to bow out at the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
But the Richard Dean Anderson, I'm a fan of Stargate and MacGyver, and the other show he did, Legend, I think it was.
Yeah.
With John DeLancey. So I'm very curious about that panel.
Yeah.
But I'm a little afraid if it's the same moderator. He needs no introduction. Do you have any questions?
Yeah.
And again, sometimes you get some really great questions. Other times, it's a different cadence of a panel if you've got, you know, a swarm of people doing one-off questions versus somebody who's actually having an engaging conversation with somebody.
Yes.
And I'm not saying they shouldn't do questions at all, but start it off with something of a recap of the person's career, Mm-hmm. Is there something they really want to talk about, they're passionate about, then go to questions.
But it's the nature of a 45-minute panel versus an hour or longer panel at a convention where the autograph lines feel like they're only for people paying for autographs.
Well, and it's funny because this exhibit hall had two portions to it and separated by a staircase that we never went down.
Yeah.
But it gave you a pretty good overview of the autograph area, which was immense.
Yeah.
Probably as big as it felt like the exhibit hall.
Mm-hmm. But a lot of these conventions, and like you said, we haven't been down to the celebrity area yet, but so many of them these days make you feel like you can't go within 25 or 50 feet of the celebrity unless you're willing to pay $40, $50, $100 yes. to get that autograph. So for a lot of people, they feel like the only chance to get to say something or ask something of a celebrity is at the mic at a panel.
And I get that. And
I just think it's unfortunate.
I agree with that too. I just think that if you start a panel with, here's our guest, what questions do you have? Moderator's not doing a whole lot at that point.
Yeah. Most of what this moderator did was disqualify questions.
There were one or two times he had a follow-up question that was decent.
Yeah.
And there were one or two times, like with Amy Jo Johnson, tell us about what you're directing and that kind of stuff. It was a good conversation. I thought it was not a most appropriate start.
Yeah.
If it had been, hey, we all know you from Power Rangers, you've done Felicity, we know you from Flashpoint, but tell us about your latest stuff. You step behind the camera mm-hmm. and get into that.
Mm-hmm.
Even with a 30-second intro, I think he could have built into that.
Well, and she started it with, you know, I feel like people think I stopped working because they don't know I stepped behind the camera.
Yeah. So, again, interesting stuff, and there were, particularly getting out of the panels, I really felt the crush of the crowd.
Yes.
But beyond that, not so much. A lot of people in costume.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the typical regular sort of costume and kind of the mashup costume. We saw one Iron Man chef.
Mm-hmm.
One that looked like it was Dorothy of Oz by way of Jakku, i.e. Rey of Star Wars. And I thought I saw one that was a mashup of Popeye and Aquaman.
Oh, how funny.
So there are a couple where it's pretty clever.
Yeah.
And a couple that it's just the costuming is absolutely amazing. There are one or two where there was one guy in green jeans, a yellow belt, and an orange shirt. And just from behind, it's like, well, clearly he's doing Aquaman. But as a, you know, comfortable sort of, not a cosplay, if you will.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, there was one girl who was walking very awkwardly on some very challenging boots. And I'm like, I don't even know who you're cosplaying other than girl who will have blisters by tonight.
Or broken ankle because she fell.
Yes.
There are a couple of costumes. There was one who was a person who did Baymax or whatever from Big Hero 6, which is essentially the Michelin Man.
Uh-huh.
And one or two that were just big and bulky. And I get these are sometimes great characters, but it's not crowd friendly at a convention.
Yeah.
And there are the requisite photo bubbles and stuff like that where people just stop, open up a space for a photo, and then clog up stuff in terms of traffic flow. It's just nature of the beast.
Yeah.
But that's also part of why I think having a little bit wider aisles is advantageous.
Mm-hmm.
There are one or two booths that were just hard to get into.
Mm-hmm.
Partially because they were crowded, one or two because they had set up almost mini aisles in the thing. And it's like, I'm not skinny enough to get in there.
Yeah.
And of course, that cuts down how much I'll buy at their booth.
Funny how that works.
It is. I mean, I usually don't spend a whole lot at conventions, but if there's stuff I want.
One of the funniest comments we heard in line, we were standing next to a very nice couple. And I don't know what prompted it, but they said, so did you guys also come in from town? And we said, yeah. They said, yeah, we're in from Oklahoma, and we just figured out we're taking a one-week cruise early next year, and it's costing less than a long weekend here.
Between the hotel room and travel expenses, even if you're driving and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And badges.
And badges and food, it adds up.
Yeah.
But, I mean, these kinds of conventions are a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
The people behind Fan Expo Dallas do Fan Expo Toronto. They do Fan Days or whatever.
Yes.
That we've been to, I think. That's the one in Irvine.
Yes. Irving.
Irving, sorry. And they've done one or two other shows. So they know how to run a show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one in October looks good. I'm sorry we won't be able to do that one.
Yeah, but this was one that between Richard Dean Anderson and Amy Jo Johnson, they were going to have the lead from Discovery, but
yes,
she backed out. They were going to have Michael J. Fox, but mm-hmm. he backed out. But they've got Leah Thompson, Christopher Lloyd, and
Biff.
Tom Wilson.
Thank you.
Biff. The rest of the core Back to the mm-hmm. Future crew.
I'll admit, tomorrow I'm a little curious about Chuck Norris. We'll yeah. see if I make it to his panel.
Who else did they have? Billy Dee Williams.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just every time we turned around, there was
Maureen Bachran.
Yeah.
Ben McKenzie. Yeah.
It was funny because, you know, particularly when Chris Cox got the question about, you know, who's the better Daredevil and stuff, it occurred to me that they've also got Val Kilmer who played Batman.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, Affleck was kind of redundant on that score. But it's funny how they'll have people for different shows, but you realize you've also got a decent part of the cast of this other show.
Momoa's here.
Is he?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Not doing a panel, but signing.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, between and photo ops, because mm-hmm. he and Ben Affleck.
Mm-hmm.
So that's two of the Justice Leaguers.
Yeah.
You've got Momoa and Bachran, so it's two people from different franchises of Stargate franchises mm-hmm. or branches. You've got Bachran and McKenzie, so two from Gotham.
Yeah.
You know, it's when you've again the autograph area section of the thing just was pretty sizable and very populated.
Yeah.
Both in terms of guests but also attendees interested in those guests.
Yeah.
So they're doing a good job attracting the talent.
What is it called? Stranger Things?
Yeah.
I think they have two, maybe three of those cast members.
Interesting.
So like I said, they just kept announcing people. It was like every week or two, another person got announced.
Well, and even a few of them, like Kavanaugh, were last minute sort of announcements.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're interested in the Marvel Netflix stuff, the CW shows, the movies, you know, be it Marvel, Star Wars, whatever, they've got stuff that you would be interested in, particularly at this convention, but also at a lot of others.
Yeah.
So this is one where it's well worth going to if you're in the Texas area or adjoining states.
Yeah.
Again, they run the Fan Expo Toronto, which we had a blast at.
Mm-hmm. This one, to me, is a more manageable size than Fan Expo Toronto was.
I would agree with that, but I think at Toronto, we also saw some pretty big name people.
We did.
Matt Smith and stuff. Not that they've got not big names here.
True.
So it comes down to how far are you willing to travel
mm-hmm.
And, you know, your budget and such.
Yeah.
But certainly this is one that I would put as kind of a regional show
mm-hmm.
in terms of I don't know that people all over the country should congregate here, although mm-hmm. there's certainly good cause of travel expense if you can budget that in terms of the celebrity guests they get.
2 years ago, rooms were filling up, but we were the smaller rooms.
Yes.
We haven't tried for the smaller rooms yet, but this time the main theater, which seems to be their bigger room, didn't fill up.
I got into every panel I tried to is what it comes down to.
Which is something I appreciate. I like shows where if I want to go to the panel, I can get into the panel.
But the time or two years ago that I missed, I was kind of a last minute, oh, it's starting at this time, I'll get there at that time. Here, we were getting in line early.
True, but there were lots of empty seats at the time the panel started.
I'm wondering if anyone got turned away at Kavanaugh.
I don't think so, because there were lots. There were still four or five empty rows.
All right, I hadn't noticed, so.
Mm-hmm.
So, fun convention, again, a couple of good guests that we're going to go check out tomorrow. May do a little bit more in the exhibit hall and such. We'll see what there is to see.
Yeah.
Cool. So we've completed our second day, the third actual day of Fan Expo Dallas. And on this Sunday, what we did was actually got there at a reasonable hour.
9:45.
before technically the hall opened, but it was open. So it's like, hey, let's go into the exhibit hall. And we ducked through a couple of aisles. I just wanted to double check if they had any more of those Power Ranger figures I wanted. They did not, but I was happy I checked. And then we also took a look this time, because we really didn't do that yesterday, at the celebrity area. Because yesterday, it was just a sea of humanity.
It's funny what happens when you get there before they're technically open.
Well, and also during church hours on a Sunday.
Very true.
And it's one of those things where the exhibit hall goes down 7-8 steps to a slightly lower level, which was cool because from the upper part you had a good vantage point.
And there was a ramp.
And there was a ramp. It's fully wheelchair accessible, as is most places these days for this sort of venue. But it gave you a good way to kind of get an overview because on looking at it from that staircase, the far right had the big stars, the Anthony Daniels, the
Val Kilmer, Cary Elwes, Chuck Norris.
Chuck Norris was on the far right. Then there was a middle aisle that had those, which were also big name ones. That was where Richard Dean Anderson was, Val Kilmer, who had a little tented off area that was kind of weird, but a more private setting, and I can see him doing that. Well, not him particularly. I can see a celebrity doing that. It's not a bad idea. Then on the other side of that was the voice artists, and they had a lot of them, like at least, I'm going to say 20 different ones. Which means they had at least about 20 or so TV movie star celebrities and another couple that were, I think, between those two aisles, a couple were really big name ones.
Yeah.
You know, current ones like Jason Momoa, past ones like Gary Lockwood from both Lost in Space and 2001 A Space Odyssey, along with the other guy who's in the main credit for that.
They were doing a big 2001 A Space Odyssey push. And I noticed on the trailers they were showing for that, that some theaters are doing a big screen 50th anniversary showing of it.
Yeah. Between panels, they showed a lot of trailers, and that one showed up quite a few times. Then further to the left of the voice artists were almost the equivalent of an artist alley, but it was cosplayers, which I thought was interesting.
Beyond that was a land speeder and Ray's bike-ish thing.
A couple of vehicles from various shows or movies. There was also a Batmobile from the Christopher Nolan movies and the DeLorean from Back to the Future.
Yeah, and there were six very nice fantasy backdrops, I guess is the way to put it.
Yeah, it was something that if you wanted to take photos for cosplayers in front of, that's what they were set up for.
Mm-hmm. On the one hand, I loved the art. I thought the backdrops were fantastic. On the other hand, it was only about 10-foot depth allotted to it. So I kept wondering, okay, yes, you're going to stay within the camera frame, but are you really going to get the depth and the perspective your photo needs for the height of the person versus that backdrop has an entire castle, for instance.
Well, the other thing is they were all fantasy-type settings. So if you had a bunch of superhero cosplayers,
yes,
it would feel out of place. So still, it was cool to have that. And there was another place that we had seen upstairs near the main theater where they had the Fan Expo kind of background as another kind of a backdrop.
Kind of a red carpet one.
In terms of
walking the red carpet to a movie premiere.
And then at one point we were standing in line for something. We were overseeing an area, and I saw a lot of people setting up cameras and doing cosplay type stuff. Because a lot of the cosplayers meet with photographers and get some stuff done there. And it works out well for both sides, apparently.
Yeah.
Not into the cosplay stuff, so don't really know. But
well, and we had a major revelation of what was just beyond the cosplay area.
Yeah, with that area down where they had the cosplayers having booths, which surprised me a little bit, there was a fairly large food court area. That was where we made, I believe, our second purchase of the convention. You needed some fudge, so we got you some fudge.
I needed to be able to say, fudge!
You can say that anyway. But getting you something to eat while we were doing all the walking around made sense. And it was a good-sized area.
It was very large. And
not well signed.
I was going to say minimally, if at all, marked. And it was behind curtains.
It was behind curtains, and there were enough food places in the exhibit hall area along the edge to make me think, well, that's what they've got. Not a go down and a ways to the left. and you'll see all this stuff.
Yeah.
It pays to check out the map and to walk the whole place.
Yeah. I was going to say, I never looked enough at the map to know if that was on there.
Yeah. So we did that, and then we headed off to our first panel, which was back in the main theater. Mm-hmm. This is, again, one of the curtained off areas that's essentially in the exhibit hall floor, which means, once again, we had some PA interruptions twice during it. And this was Chuck Norris.
A fireside chat.
A fireside chat, which apparently means no questions.
And no fireside.
And no fireside. But a lot of chatting. It was interesting because it was Chuck and his wife and a moderator. And the moderator has done some martial arts. So he was very interested in that. And part of why they didn't want to take questions was Chuck's hearing's not what it once was, mm-hmm. although it seemed all right. Although he did seem to, even with his wife, have some hard times hearing.
He had some hard times hearing with his wife. His wife had to signal him when the moderator wanted to talk to him. He wasn't always aware when the microphone wasn't picking up his voice, and his wife had to signal him to lift the mic. He wasn't aware when the PA was interfering with him, and his wife and the moderator had to tell him, put down the mic and just let the PA go.
Now, he was doing Walker, Texas Ranger...
in the early, mid, throughout the 90s.
Throughout the 90s, which was not the start of his career. He'd been doing stuff as far back as the 70s.
Yeah.
So not a young man, looks in incredible shape for his age.
Still works out 6 days a week and gave his workout routine.
Yeah. So, you know, again, very impressive from that standpoint. And as anyone gets older, the hearing starts to go. There were a couple of times he was fumbling for words. And what I found very interesting is he was very much trying to give a good presentation for the fans. He knew the kinds of stuff that were going to be asked. He had handwritten notes.
And part of what fascinated me with that is he knew the stories he wanted to tell in answer to the questions he gets most often. He didn't want to get the years wrong. He didn't want to get any of the details wrong, because he wanted us to get it, not just the way he kind of recalls it now, but the way he recalled it best.
He didn't want to fumble the answer.
Yeah.
And the moderator clearly knew what those questions kind of were, because he kept guiding straight down.
Yes.
So on the one hand, it felt a little bit like a pre-scripted interview, but it hit the highlights of pretty much, I think, mostly of what you would expected. You had commented afterwards it was a bit more on the martial arts than on the movie side.
Definitely. And part of that is the moderator was very into martial arts, does martial arts, etc. But part of that was there was no real preamble. And the moderator didn't really clarify that Chuck Norris wanted to talk about the fact that he didn't set out to be an actor.
Yeah, he considered himself a fighter who went into acting versus, say, Bruce Lee, who was more into the movie side of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and he was talking at one point about the fact that he had pulled Bruce Lee aside at one point and said, you know, I think if you wanted to be a fighter, you could do pretty well at it. And he's like, no, this acting thing is what I want to do.
Yeah.
And It was fascinating. He was talking about being in a Bruce Lee movie, and the way they were talking about it at the time, I'm like, so he acted in the movie, which I hadn't realized. But then later in the conversation, the interview, however you want to phrase this, it comes out he didn't do any acting until after Bruce Lee died. All the work he did before that was stunt work.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because Chuck Norris is in that upper echelon of movie action heroes.
Yeah.
You've got him, you've got Bruce Lee, you've got Jackie Chan. And then I would say from there, you go down to that next level. We've got some really amazing people.
Well, and one of the things that he brought out right from the beginning, because he wanted it to be known and to be clarified if it was suspected or falsely known, was where he learned his martial arts. Because so many Americans go to a school here in America and they learn in Asian martial arts and say, I know this martial arts from Korea, from Japan, from China, from wherever. He went into the military in 1958. He was serving in Korea, and a master of one of the martial arts there in Korea was teaching him.
Well, and he also was saying later he was in Brazil, I think it was.
Yes.
With the Gracie family, which is legendary in, I forget which branch of martial arts. But for their branch, they are like the gold standard. As a matter of fact, there are a couple of places here in town, Austin, that are the Gracie school of this, that, or the other. Mm-hmm. And Chuck had the opportunity to study with the head of the family and one of the sons, but couldn't stay there. So he ended up studying with a different son back in California.
Yeah.
But, I mean, again, his training is incredible. His impact on movies and television is insane. And, you know, this is a guy, again, you were just saying, he joined the military in, what, 58? So he had to be 18, work your way backwards. So born somewhere around 1940.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, in 2018, to be doing the panel and stuff, still being in such physically great shape, mm-hmm. you know, you've got to just roll with the fact that, again, he wanted to give a good set of answers. So he'd taken the time, presumably with his wife, to, okay, let's get the stuff. Mm-hmm. And you could see very clearly he was sitting there reading and his hand would move along the paper and such.
Yes, yes.
So, and it was not kind of that smooth teleprompter kind of a reading. He was fumbling a couple of words, whatever, here and there. But, I mean, nobody cared.
Exactly, because it was coming from the heart.
It was coming from the heart. He was there for the fans in Dallas where he had filmed Walker, Texas Ranger.
Yes.
And
I'll openly admit, I went to college in the Dallas area. And at one point, it was, you can get credit for school if you get an internship during this 1 month at somewhere that's in your professional. And I tried for an internship on Walker, Texas Ranger, because it worked with my concentration in college.
It's interesting. While the format of the panel, and I don't mean just the fireside chat, which is essentially interview kind of a thing, but the almost pre-scripted nature, the reading off the notes, felt a little odd. And it was the first time I've ever seen that. He gave better answers than I felt a few of the other people we've seen at conventions that are just kind of winging it off the cuff, that are much younger and therefore able to hear better, much more mentally alert. And
his answers were genuine.
Yes.
They were from the heart. One of the things that he and his wife brought up were, I refer to them as the Chuck Norris memes. They refer to them as the Chuck Norris facts.
Mm-hmm.
Others, I think, simply call them the Chuck Norris jokes. You know, and the wife brought up it first in the context of, you know, people want to know, how does he feel about them?
It's a fair question.
And I'll admit, if I could have gone to the mic and asked any one question, that might have been it. Because I've always wondered, is he offended by this? Because there are some that I'm like, wow, that's hilarious. I'm tempted to share it, but I would not want to accidentally offend this man.
Mm-hmm.
And the response fascinated me. He loves it. He's honored by it, in large part because it's keeping the younger generations aware of him. It's keeping him relevant with generations he wants to help.
It almost raises him to the level of folklore hero.
Yes. Yes.
And to me, that's also what separates him, Bruce Lee, and Jackie Chan from, again, that next level of action heroes, some of which are also amazing fighters.
Well, and
but they don't have that mythology almost around them.
But they were talking about all of the things he's doing to help with schools for training, fighting
yeah.
for these kids and helping kids who've gone through these programs and these schools get into college and turn their lives around and keep on the straight and narrow. And he's saying some of these kids who may have been tempted to say, you know, that's not for me.
Well, that's the thing. Some of these kids, when they got done, they got out of impressive colleges, had the opportunity for high-paying jobs, went and then said, no, I wanted to go teach in some of these schools, in some of these programs.
Yeah.
And he's like, you're only going to make, you know, $30,000-$40,000. You could be making, you know, $100,000 plus or whatever. It's like, it's not about the money. This changed my life. I want to change other people's lives.
Yeah. You saved my life. I want to save others the way you saved me.
So, impressive stuff.
Yeah.
So, I thought, again, the format of the panel was a little different.
Mm-hmm.
He needed a little bit of help to kind of stay on the path or whatever. But it was very clearly from the heart. And It was fun to see him. I think he would have been very interesting to have seen 20, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at that point he would have been, I don't say enough of a star, but working enough. And it would have been a different presentation in a number of respects.
Yes. Because this presentation came from a place of gratitude,
mm-hmm.
from a place of introspection and reflection, and from a place of recognizing these are the things about my life I'm grateful for, I appreciate, and I'm not entirely sure other people know and appreciate.
Yeah. After that, we had to cut back through the exhibit hall and stuff, and spent the rest of the day up in room D2.
In room D2 is kind of an exaggeration.
In the vicinity of room D2, we would go to panels, get thrown. Well, first we'd get in line for a panel, and then we'd get into the room, then we'd sit in the panel, then we'd get out of the room to get back in the line, to get back into the room, to get out of, you know. We did a couple of laps around room D2 over the course of the day.
4 miles today.
Some of that was to and from the convention center, but a lot of that was around D2. The first panel we saw in D2 was from the Princess Bride.
Carrie Elwick.
Yeah. And he, you know, it's funny because when he was in the pilot for Wonder Woman, the TV show that didn't go, with Adrian Pilecki, I think it was, who went on to do Mockingbird, essentially, Bobby Morris in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and has now gone on to be on The Orville. She was Wonder Woman there. Did an okay job. The writing was not right. He played, I forget if it was Steve Trevor or an equivalent, and he seemed to have like gained some weight, aged. He came out on stage, and you would not think the Princess Bride was 30 years ago.
Yes.
And he could easily pass for a man, maybe not quite half his age, but much younger. Very energetic, very witty, very good with the impressions of his co-stars and co-workers and whatnot, and just told some hilarious stories.
Well, one of the trailers that they were showing was for Teen Titans Go, the movie.
Oh, yes. So they've got the Teen Titans Go to the Movies as a movie, so they've got a trailer for it. And there's one where they're fighting this big monster thing. I don't know if it's supposed to be chemo or whatever, but, you know, Robin tells the Titans to attack. Beast Boy has changed into a porcupine, shoots a bunch of quills into this thing's purple butt, bursts it, and air is flowing out. And it's a big, long fart, which, of course, as Beast Boy stitches, he's like, it's not a fart. It's just air going out of my, you know, behind. Raven's like, that's what a fart is. You know, but Carrie had told a story about Andre the Giant, who played Fezzik. On their first day of shooting, they are doing this one scene. I forget which one he said it was. And right at the inopportune moment or whatever,
he was supposed to say the word long.
He was supposed to say the word long. He lets one loose. And the way Carrie described it, this isn't just, you know, everyone says there's a giant fart. This is a giant farting. And apparently, because they filmed the rehearsal this, you know, as that Rob Reiner was wont to do, it lasted like a 16-second long fart.
He said it was so loud, the sound guy was taking the earphones off his ears to protect his eardrums.
It was a funny story, and it was exceptionally well told.
Yes.
And he's written a book, As You Wish, which catchphrase from the movie, and he's done an audio version of it. And if he tells the stories halfway as well there, and I've got to imagine he does, it's got to be hilarious.
Well, it's funny because, you know, the Teen Titans trailer was okay before that panel.
Yes, but then afterwards, we had a whole different take on it. That's what happens when they show the same trailers over and over and over again. I would say of the people we saw this weekend, he was probably the most animated, probably the best storyteller.
Yes, yes.
And just made for an excellent guest at a convention. If you have the chance at a convention to see him at a panel, do so.
If I'm recalling correctly, he was the one who, when the moderator started to use a certain word, he stopped the moderator and replaced the word with something age appropriate to all ages in the audience.
Yeah, he was the first one to do that. There were one or two others in that same room with different moderators, where the guest is essentially calling out the moderator on language.
Yeah.
And it's not like they were outrageously profane or something, but I respect both venues and certainly guests that are trying to keep things all age appropriate. And there are a couple of times people had danced around a few things, but it's, again, it's sign of the times. Most people wouldn't get fazed either way. So he was a lot of fun.
He was a delight. He was one of the ones I was excited about because never seen him at a convention before, didn't know if we'd see him at a convention again. And I'll admit, he was a highlight for me on Psych.
I thought he was good on Psych. Frankly, I was not impressed with him on the Wonder Woman stuff. Again, Princess Bride is classic, Men in Tights and some of his other work. He's got a great body of work, not all of which I've seen. I'll be honest, before the panels, yeah, if we see him, we see him. If we don't, we don't.
Men in Tights, his stories about that were priceless.
Yes, where he was getting the coaching on archery. It's like, you ever shoot archery? He's like, no. So, oh, don't worry, you'll just wing it. You'll get a bullseye. Here, watch. The guy shoots, gets a bullseye. Yeah, see, it's not so hard. It's like, for you? And then apparently they were doing that right before launch. Oh, yeah, we'll just get this in real quick. And he shoots it, and he's like, not even close. Didn't get to the next one or the next one. And, of course, he tells it much better.
Well, and then the director's like, everybody's hungry. One more take.
Yeah, because they're doing this right before launch, because it'll be quick, as if that's easy. So I'm curious. We should check out the audiobook and at least see a sample of it first.
Yeah.
Because, again, he does a terrific job telling these anecdotes, and it was a lot of fun.
And a lot of fun is the impression I had of him from Psych.
Yeah, I could see where he fit in well with that crowd and that sensibility. I could see him and Rodé.
He was one of the few people that came back multiple times on Psych that I looked forward to.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was really looking forward to, I want to find out if he's as much a comedian in real life as he came across on Psych, or if that was just, you know, good acting, good scripting.
No, I would say either he spent the time polishing the stories for the book, but certainly at this point he's got the delivery.
Yeah.
And the timing and all of that. It was, again, a lot of fun.
Yeah. He did a great job with the panel.
So after that, we got out of the room, got back in the line to get back in the room to see the next guest, which was Marina Baccarin.
Yes.
Who has done Stargate, Firefly, Homeland, V, Deadpool, Gotham, and I'm sure I'm forgetting probably about 18 other things she's done. She's been everywhere. Very talented actress. A lot of fun to watch. I might have known, but just hadn't recalled. She was married to Ben McKenzie, who was also there for Gotham and such. And it was funny because at one point the moderator's asking, so the typical look, you know, for Commissioner Gordon, the thick glasses, the big bushy, you know, mustache, you know, where do you weigh in? He's like, nope, not going to happen. She's not allowed, you know.
Mm-hmm. And it's she funny. Flat out said, because I'm married to him and I don't want to live with it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It was that the questions on that panel covered a lot of ground.
When she was asked about Homeland, she was very upfront about the writing didn't give me much. So I had to really look into the character and figure out, okay, what is this character going through? What is this character living with?
What I found interesting is the phrase she uses, it was underwritten.
Yes.
And she never said that the writing on Homeland was bad, but her character got the short end of the script.
Yes.
And there were, when she was talking about V, she was talking about the show she was pitched.
Yes.
Where the visitors had been there a long time, maybe they caused the flu, some world wars, etc. But that's not the show they wound up doing, and she was very depressed with that, or not happy with that. And she felt that the writers just didn't know where they were going with it.
Yeah. Well, and when she described what she had been pitched, she flat out said, they pitched me this great, you know, conspiracy that had been going on hundreds of years, and this arrival was actually the end game.
Yeah. They've set everything up. Now they're just becoming public and cleaning up or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that would have been a much better show. And she was very apologetic to the fans of, I thought we were going to do something great. Well, we did. Yeah, it was fun. It was good. But
we didn't deliver what I was pitched. And yeah. I'm sorry.
There was a better show to be had.
Yeah.
I think was her frustration.
Yeah.
And she made a comment or two about having some side projects that may never happen, but there's always that dream of having more say, having more control, having your voice listened to creatively and such, that I think there have been some times where, again, shows getting cut short, a la Firefly, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and she was saying it's important for everyone to dream.
Yeah. She gave, I thought, really good answers. I thought the audience gave really good questions because it touched on V, Homeland, Firefly, Gotham, Deadpool. I'm trying to think if there was any major thing she'd worked on that really hadn't gotten touched.
Stargate.
Yeah, that was probably it. She gave good answers, has a sense of humor, but wasn't just joking around.
Yeah, yeah.
And gave some serious answers at times. Nothing overly, you know, either sentimental or sappy or overly intellectual for the sake of doing so or whatever.
Yeah.
But was fun. Mm-hmm. So enjoyed that. Then we got out of the room, got back in the line to get back into the room to see Richard Dean Anderson.
And again, very much was looking forward to him, in part not only because never seen him at a convention before, but I remember way back when SG-1 was the only Stargate on the air, and we were being told, yeah, he doesn't do conventions.
Well, and going further back, having watched all 7 seasons of MacGyver, the TV movies, the Legend show he did with John DeLancey, between yes. that and SG-1.
And based on applause, apparently we are 2 of the 8 people who watched the show with John DeLancey.
Which is funny, because he credited that as his favorite role.
Yes, I loved that show.
We need to rewatch it. There's aspects of it that remind me of the Old West part of Back to the Future.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it was so funny.
And again, I'm a huge fan of his body of work and stuff. And I'd seen 1 or 2 interviews in the past on YouTube or whatnot. So I kind of knew what to expect. And it's one of those things, particularly, you know, having watched MacGyver and stuff, there's a certain, you know, you'd kind of like the guy to be like the character. Mm-hmm. He's not.
Yeah.
And not in a bad way, but there's an aspect of his Angus MacGyver that is the compulsive do-gooder, always sees the bright side of things, incredibly just smart. And Richard Dean Anderson is a bit more kind of an acerbic sense of humor, a bit more, not laid back, it's not the right term, but more the everyman than the intellectual. And he's not stupid by any stretch.
No, he gave an unplanned lecture on the English language there at the end.
I expected that, though, because his mother, I think, was an English teacher.
Yeah, and knowing that, I was actually surprised early on when he asked if he'd used the right word to describe something. I was surprised.
And there was a time or two he was struggling for words.
Yeah.
But again, he's been doing this for quite some time. I think we think he's, what, 65-ish?
That's my best guess.
And I'm younger than that, and I struggle for words at times, so I'm not going to knock him on that. He was there to give light answers.
He wanted to have fun with us.
And there were 1 or 2 questions that I think deserved a little bit more, not introspection, but a little bit more meat to them. Because he was kind of asked, you know, how do you prepare for a character? Oh, I've got my methods. I've got my technique. That was about it.
Well, and, you know, he pointed out at that point, he's like, basically, I could go into it, but that'd be like a 5 or a 10 minute deep answer. And I don't want to get deep, yeah. Heavy, serious. I want to have fun.
And on the one hand, I get that. On the other hand, there's a time for it and a place for it. And the panel's sometimes that. Because we've seen some people give some really good answers on that sort of a thing.
We accidentally got a great answer on that sort of thing in the next panel.
Well, the one we went to, I forget which actor it was, the one who played on Star Trek, Greenwood. Yes, thank you, Bruce Greenwood. Yes?
Yeah. Yes.
Gave a really good on his technique, on some of that, coached a girl on getting over stage fright. And that was something where it wasn't just light, jovial answers, but it was an excellent panel. But again, I wasn't really expecting that from Richard Dean Anderson. He was certainly very respectful of the body of work he's done. He takes some pride in that. He is, I think, utterly flabbergasted on the impact that both his character of Jack O'Neill and particularly Angus MacGyver have had. I think there's a part of him that just doesn't believe it. He sees it. He knows it's happened.
A combination of that and just grappling with the people watched MacGyver and they were inspired in so many directions. They went into science. They went into engineering. They watched this character who would not touch a gun no matter what and they went into the military.
That I attributed to O'Neill, not MacGyver.
But
he had had that kind of an impact on people through his roles.
Yes, but some of that, but it was also just MacGyver was a defender, a problem solver.
Yes. I think there is almost a mythology around the MacGyver character that it seems like Richard Dean Anderson is like, I was the man behind the curtain. It's not real, you know, kind of
Well, and he's meeting second generation fans.
Yes.
Moriah Bachram was hilarious during her panel when someone comes up to the mic and says, I'm so-and-so and my daughter is Inara. And her response was,
yeah, don't do what I do.
Yeah.
Choose another line of work. And very careful not to say what Inara's line of work was, but of kind of...
Yes.
It's gotta kind of freak out an actress or an actor, particularly in a fantasy sci-fi kind of a thing, to have somebody name their kid after your character.
Yeah.
Kind of weird.
Yeah.
But again, people are huge fans of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And again, with MacGyver, the fact that people have become engineers, physicists, construction workers, whatever, because that character had such a profound impact. Others, the Jack O'Neill character had a profound impact. He was pointing out, it's like I had somebody come who was in the Army. It's like, okay, that's that guy. The Navy was this guy, you know.
Yeah,
he did. A couple of people had credited him for getting them.
And he did a call out for every branch of the service.
And he admitted feeling, I forget if he had said it was guilty or what, but just kind of, it's not like he was setting out to have that kind of an impact on somebody's life.
Yeah.
He's certainly not upset with it.
No.
He's humbled by it, I think. He was astonished.
Yeah.
And, you know, he gave some good answers. There were a couple that meandered a little bit, and there were a couple of times. And it may just be the acoustics in the room and the PA system, which got progressively worse during the day, where I don't know that they could always hear the questions.
Yeah, there was definitely that. And he couldn't help but have a little fun with the interpreters for the hearing impaired.
Did you catch the one or two times he was signing to them?
I thought that happened.
And that doesn't surprise me in the least, because I know there was at least one or two MacGyver episodes where he had to know sign language. So I'm sure he remembers some of it.
I thought he was doing something, because at first it just started out with he used the word piddly.
Yeah, it's like, I want to see how you sign that.
Yes.
There were a few times where I think the interpreters and the two young ladies doing it, and they do a fantastic job as far as I can tell, not knowing what they're signing. But I think he made them both a little self-conscious.
Mm-hmm. Well, because he says, you know, I had to do this at the other talk, talk, talk. And then he looks over as they're signing and he goes, talk, talk, talk.
And it's just like a puppet show at that point.
Yes, yes. And at one point, you just have this feeling he's going to say random words just to see them sign them.
I'm sure if he had thought of it, he would have. But there was very much, you're on stage doing this interview, you look over and there are other people just signing, and whatever comes out of your mouth comes out of their hands.
Yes.
It's like the power.
Yes.
So it was a fun panel. It was a little short. They started a little late.
Yes.
These are scheduled on the hour. They were getting to where with that one it started 10 minutes late, maybe a little after. And then the next one we went to started at least 15 minutes late. And that was a little frustrating because they had to essentially throw most of the people out. If you were premium badge holders, you could stay.
He started 15 minutes late.
I thought the next one did too. Maybe it did.
Oh, you're right. Okay. Yeah. The next one started 15 minutes late. He started 10 minutes late. You're right.
And the previous one, like five. And it was funny because they had refilled the room. We were sitting in the room for 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Before this thing started. So I don't know what was going on. That was a little frustrating because it took what would have been a 45-minute panel and condensed it down to like closer to 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So not sure what was up with that, but everybody seemed to have a good time. Mm-hmm. There seemed to be a lot of fans, both of MacGyver and Stargate for him, and pretty good sized line we'd gotten into it. So after that, we once again got out of the room, got back into the line to get back into the room, and there was pretty long line for this one.
Yes.
And it was Christopher Lloyd and Tom Wilson from Back to the Future. And I had commented to you as we were going in, there's a sizable age gap between those two. And it's funny because, I mean, Christopher Lloyd's not a young man. He, too, was working back, I think, in the 70s on Taxi.
Yes.
And has had just an incredible career. And you know, going in there, I'm thinking Tom Wilson. He's played Biff. I'm sure he's done a few other things here and there. Didn't really expect a whole lot from him. The guy is hilarious.
Yes.
And he and Christopher Lloyd clearly get along well.
They play so well off each other.
A little ribbing back and forth, etc. kind of a thing. There were a lot of times where Chris was having a hard time hearing the question, so Tom filled in. Tom's done enough of these panels and knows the typical questions that when they finally, and it was a ways in, because this was the last panel of the day, so they ran long.
Yes.
They went for at least an hour and 10 minutes, if not longer, which I appreciated. Mm-hmm. But when they got to the Q&A, he's like, here are the standard questions, picks up, I don't know, a ukulele or whatever, and essentially plays a little song answering. You know, it was basically, what were they? The manure's not real. Michael J. Fox is nice. Christopher Lloyd, well, he's there. You know, Leah Thompson, she's hot, you know. And just the by the numbers, there's not going to be a Back to the Future 4, you know, this, that. True, they could get to the new questions.
Yes.
And yeah. It was humorous. It was funny.
And the interference from the mics.
So they have those two up there. They have the moderator who'd written a book on the history of the films. And he was a knowledgeable moderator. He was not the most conversationalist, I guess would be the way to say it. His mic was a little low. Christopher Lloyd's was really low. And at inopportune times, when Tom was talking, this big squelch would come out.
The very first time.
First time, it's like, whoops, I farted. Sorry, I didn't mean for it to be so loud. How embarrassing. You know, I mean, the guy is fast on his feet. And apparently he's done comedy routines. We need to look those up. I mean, he was hilarious. But it got to the point where this had happened enough times that Christopher Lloyd's like, you think that's just by chance it's happening when it does?
Yes.
He's like, you've gone to the future. You're in the control booth.
Yes.
But then later it happens again. I mean, by this point, it's happened 5, 6, 7, 8 times. And he's like, are there apes back there?
Yes. Yes. There was at one point when it went off. When he was trying to find a way to not say a bad word and it happened to happen, he's like, well, that was convenient. Who knew Tom Wilson was responsible for Butthead?
Yes, because the moderator was asking, you added some words to the script, didn't you? And he's like, yeah, here are my contributions. He added the Butthead stuff and basically all of the sayings that Biff just totally botches. He's like, how can I take this, do it in a totally earnest way, and just dump it down? Make this guy just thick as a brick. Thick as a rock, as he would say.
Yes, these are my contributions to pop culture. You can thank me now.
Yeah. So, I mean, he knows the impact he's had and appreciates it, but doesn't take it too seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, you know, and they also went into how the difference was with Eric Stoltz, who was originally cast, versus Michael J. Fox.
Well, and that was when we accidentally got a wonderful conversation from Tom Wilson about acting styles.
He's like, he had been essentially a method actor up until that point. Now, granted, he was a young kid, so it's not like a big body of work, but that's how he was kind of trained and stuff. And he was playing the bully. He hadn't ever really been a bully. He'd been bullied. Mm-hmm. And when he was doing that with a method approach, he's like, I don't like the way this makes me feel. This is horrible. So instead of doing the internal method, he was going more with an external method for the first time, finding new ways to work and stuff. And he felt a much better performance. It was, you know, good creative exercise. But Eric Stoltz was completely method. He was introduced as, this is Eric, but call him Marty. He's one of those sort of actors. And it's like, okay, fine. That's how he works. Everybody works differently, whatever. But then they're in the cafeteria scene where Marty's got to push Biff. And, of course, he's already gotten slapped around a couple of times by Lorraine. And then George is sitting there pushing on him. And he's like, you know, hey, it's acting. You just got to hit me, you know, push me a little. I'll fly back. I can do that. And next time he just slam, you know. And he's like, well, all right. You know, they get through that. And he's like, you know, guy wants to do method. When we do the scene of I'm yanking George out of the car, we can do method. You know, he was ready to just kick the guy's butt. But, you know, it was clear from the dailies and such, it wasn't working out, whatever. And Tom gets called in to the director. He's like, man, I'm getting fired. And, of course, that wasn't what happened.
Yeah.
But you look at the movie and kind of that timeless aspect to it. And one of the questions the moderator asked, and it was a great question, when did you kind of know it was what it was,
yeah,
kind of a deal? And he's like, well, I had a friend who was in the Walla group where they fill in all the background, you know, the people at the next table over's conversation, that sort of background stuff. And he gets a call afterwards from the guy. He's like, you're in this Back to the Future film. He's like, well, yeah. He's like, it's good. He's like, well, what do you mean? He's like, well, I was in the Walla group. I've watched the whole thing. It's really good. And then Tom was telling the story about how when they had the industry screening, and how everybody usually does, oh, very nice, very nice, and oh, I wish I was in it, kind of the faint praise and the jealous envy sort of, you know, thing. And he did a great little bit on that.
Yeah.
But how when it was over, I mean, everybody was giving a standing ovation through the entire credits. Everybody was stunned, and people are like, it's okay. This is marvelous. This is brilliant. Yeah. Here we are 30 plus years later. The thing holds up phenomenally well.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a lengthy fan base for three movies. They've since done a comic book based on it by, I'm thinking, Boom Studios. I could be wrong. It's IDW, I think. But they've done about 2 years of Back to the Future, and now they're starting the Tales of the Time Train with Doc's family.
Wait, he was saying when they were filming it, that the actors and the director and such, they went into the filming with this approach of, we're not just making a movie or a film, we're making a fable.
Mm-hmm.
And he said one of the things he learned during the filming that he'd never really thought about before, because he'd never had to think about before, is, you know, everybody has their process as an actor. Everybody has what they do to prepare. But something you have to consider is, you're just one instrument in the symphony.
Well, and I think his interaction with Eric Stoltz was a lot of what kind of crystallized that for him. And then when Michael J. Fox walked in and things were just so much easier, so much better, there was the fluidity there, the sense of timing that, mm-hmm, that Michael J. Fox had is from his background, the chemistry between him and Christopher Lloyd, everything that was just kind of, something's not working here, it's tense, it's not good. And it all just kind of instantly gels. Matter of fact, yeah, I think that was the exact way Christopher Lloyd put it.
Yeah.
And Tom's like, everybody can have their own method, but when their method impacts somebody else's method, that's bad.
Yeah.
You know, if you just need to go scroll yourself away, learn your lines, do what you got to do, that's fine. But if it doesn't come together in harmony, that's bad.
Well, and Christopher Lloyd was saying for Back to the Future too, you know, his method had never been a problem for anyone before, but his method depended on knowing the shooting schedule.
He would spend about a week before getting ready for all the stuff, just get the lines, because he had a lot of dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
He was the one who had to explain everything. And it got to where there was an injury on set. One of Griff's gang had gotten injured on the hoverboard sequence at the future clock tower. So they rearranged everything. And then from day to day, Christopher Lloyd's like, I'm not sure what we're shooting tomorrow. I don't know what to prepare. So finally, he just learned the whole script.
Yeah, he said he went from never having to know more than the next 7 days worth of scenes to suddenly having to memorize the entire script.
Yeah.
And that was new for him. And he said he was in a panic as he's trying to memorize that whole script, because he said, that's not my strength.
Well,
but he did it.
Because I felt he was in the panel, the quieter, sit back and just kind of listen. Part of it was his mic sucked.
Yes.
At one point, it flat out gave out. There was, again, the audio things. Some of it, I think he was having a little bit of a hard time hearing some of the questions.
Yes.
And he's not the energizer bunny, if you will, that Tom Wilson is.
But pairing those two together worked really well.
Because Tom was never trying to dominate the conversation either.
No, but he understood he could be the comic relief.
Yeah.
And that worked well. And when someone asked Christopher Lloyd about being the voice of Rasputin, mm-hmm, in Anastasia, he gave a fascinating answer that was very in-depth, talking about Russian history,
yeah,
and all this stuff. And when he got to the end, it was just kind of a, wow, that was a heavy answer. Tom Wilson cracked a few jokes to help lighten the mood again.
Well, and again, the two clearly get along well,
yes,
made for a great pairing.
Yeah.
And I, again, had expected really nothing out of Tom Wilson. Very impressed. A newfound respect for him as a person, plus as an actor.
Honestly, when I go to a panel like that, there's a part of me that says, okay, I watched those movies going on the assumption he was acting and not somebody wrote a role that was perfect for him.
There are enough actors that are essentially playing the same role over and over that whether they act it or are it almost doesn't matter. But then you see people, again, Richard Dean Anderson, he's not Jack O'Neill. He's certainly not Angus MacGyver, probably more on the Jack O'Neill side, but he's his own person, as all actors are. But then there are a few others where you look at it, it's like he's really not that different.
Yeah. So I went into this one thinking, I want to see that Tom Wilson is not McFly.
I was surprised again by the energy level, by the comedy.
I think the shining moment for Tom Wilson, aside from all, and don't get me wrong, I've loved everything we've said, but the shining moment for him was when a little girl asked him what was like playing multiple characters in one movie. And he said, you know, and she addressed him as Mr. Tom, which is kind of a sign of just how young she was. And he said, that's a very good question. And it was very hard because each character was unique. And I didn't want to just memorize all the dialogue because I was afraid I would memorize it all with one mindset. So I got highlighters. Do you know what highlighters are?
Yeah.
And he explained highlighters to her.
Well, then he explained, like, when he was shooting the scenes opposite another version of himself.
Yes.
How, at the time, it was brand new. They had computer-controlled cameras that would do the motion and then rewind and then do it again.
Yeah.
And how he had to do all of that stuff in a single day because they were afraid of an earthquake overnight in California and it would mess up the cameras.
Yeah.
Which I'm thinking they could have had earthquakes at any point in the day.
Yes, I was thinking that too. But yeah, he gave some great answers. And I loved that he appreciated that this was a kid asking this question, that the kid genuinely cared about the answer, and making sure that the answer was at that kid's level.
Yeah. He was aware that most people, and even though he's done voices for SpongeBob on in that cartoon and a lot of other stuff, people know him from Back to the Future. And he, I think, has a great love for both those films and what it has done for him and for the fan base.
Yeah.
He's incredibly respectful of all of his co-stars, the work they've done, the movie they've made. I think he's very proud of it. And he gave a fun panel. He gave some serious answers. He gave some light answers. He goofed around a little bit, but in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I apparently he's done a comedy special and I want to check that out.
I agree. It sounds like fun.
I was astonished how funny he was. Because of course Biff is this idiot.
Yeah.
And Tom certainly is not.
Yeah.
And again, there were a couple of times where Chris didn't quite hear the question or whatever, and he gave a really quick, very simple, boom, they're asking about this.
Yeah.
You know, and was appropriately, I don't say deferential to Chris when it was Chris's turn to talk, but it was,
well,
and neither one felt the other was stealing the spotlight or anything.
I would say they clearly have done these panels together a fair amount because some of the questions for Chris, it was, I don't think you've gotten this question. I'm going to give 10 or 20 words to get you what they want versus Clue.
Mm-hmm.
And just based on that one word, Christopher Lloyd knew what the question must have been and what the answer needed to be.
Yeah. Well, and even if they haven't done panels, they've certainly done the press junket enough.
True.
And but particularly over recent years with the resurgence of Back to the Future with the anniversary and such.
I just found it hilarious when Tom Wilson just turned to him and said, Clue.
They're asking about Clue. Tell them about Clue.
Not even all those words. The one word did it.
That is It's a shame Michael J. Fox couldn't be there. I think that would have been interesting. It would be fun to be kind of a fly on the wall with them just having, you know, a dinner party kind of a deal.
Well, another sign of just how well they get along was when somebody asked Tom Wilson if he would ever consider being on Dancing with the Stars. And his response was, only if I could pick my partner. And he picked
only one way. And he's like, I would dance with this guy kind of.
Yes.
And start dancing. Lloyd's done enough comedy and stuff, and I'm sure he knew where that was going.
Yes.
Even if the question had never come up before.
Yes. Yes.
So the fact they know each other so well and play so well together, because, I mean, it's a little unusual for there to be that big of an age gap between those kinds of co-stars and have that.
Yeah.
Although we've seen that on a few other shows. Gotham, between the actor who plays Bruce and Alfred, those two.
Yes.
They got along wonderfully together.
Yeah.
So that was a really fun panel. Glad I went. Is again, shame Michael J. Fox bowed out of the convention at the last minute, but those things happen. Mm-hmm. But certainly Tom Wilson, I went in thinking, yeah, he played Biff. He was an annoying character, as he was supposed to be. And it, particularly at the beginning when Tom came out with the ukulele or whatever it was and was doing a little bit more, you know, he almost came across as that 50-year-old who thinks he's the life of the party and he's not. Mm-hmm. Except he really was.
Yeah.
He's somebody I'm amazed isn't in like a sitcom right now or some other show. He seems like the kind of energy you would want to bring to a cast, because he seems to lighten the mood, keep it going, and make sure everybody else is doing well.
Yeah. Now, the one thing we haven't said from today that I just feel honor-bound to say is we know what job Richard Dean Anderson would like to have. He would love to work with Seth MacFarlane on the
Orville. Oh, yes. Because he was asked, I forget how it came up, what role would you like or whatever, and he had commented on how when they had one of the voice actors from Simpsons on, he's like, would you ever like guest starring? He's like, well, yeah. And the question was, well, what other sorts of things? And he's like, well, Seth MacFarlane hasn't called yet. Seth?
Yes.
And I'm like, I think it'd be hilarious to have him on the Orville, either as like a MacGyver type or as a Jack O'Neill type or a little of both, or one who thinks he's the other or something.
Yeah.
Or just as a, I've tried retiring, why the hell do you people keep calling me?
Yes.
I think it'd be fun. I think they'd play well off each other. And I think Seth's sense of humor and Richard Dean Anderson's sense of humor could get an absolutely fantastic performance out of him.
Yeah.
So that would be a lot of fun. Again, we went to 5 panels today. I also did a lot of walking around to get in the rooms, to stay back in the room, to get back into the room. But it was fun. It was a really good crowd, some really great questions, really great guests, good answers.
Yeah.
And again, a lot of these are ones that it's potluck sometimes when you go to a panel. Do you get good questions? Is this a guest that's comfortable doing these sorts of things, experienced doing these sorts of things? Are they a good storyteller? Or are they not?
Mm-hmm.
Are they having a hard time hearing the questions? Or are they not in the right frame of mind for the panel? Out of 5 in a row, I thought we did really well.
Yeah, it was a great day.
So we did that. Afterwards, we headed back to the hotel and drove back to Austin, which is where we're at right now. So for really a up, spend 2 days and come back, it was a fun weekend. It was tiring because I also had the number crunching to do, and it was also a preview spotlight weekend, so I've still got to edit that. Not the most convenient of weekends to do this.
Well, and it was the same weekend as C2E2 and we're pretty sure Silicon Valley.
Yeah, so a lot of conventions going on. But again, the guest list was outstanding. It's a good size show. We were able to get into every panel we wanted, including walking out of a room to get back into the line to get back into the room. So weren't blocked out of anything that way. I was a little concerned by that. But it's a great show, well worth going to. And just when you are looking to go to a convention, it helps if there's a plethora of people or things you're interested in, because any one or two could back out for a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
Illness, scheduling conflict, you know, whatever.
Well, and I mean, we went to so many panels that we were unable to go to Ben McKenzie, Amy Acker, Anthony Daniels. I mean, so many panels were going on during the ones we did go to.
I really think some of these conventions, particularly the ones that have the cameras and stuff going, they almost need to set up a virtual pass where you get a virtual badge and you can get, you know, the footage or something. Be a little hard for them to work the deal, but I think it'd be well worth it if they can. So anything else on this? Are we good?
I think we're good.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. thanks for listening.